Welcome to the Digital Families Podcast. I'm Leonie Smith, sometimes known as the Cyber Safety Lady. I'm a cyber safety educator, and this podcast is all about learning how to use the digital technology in our homes with more safety and balance. My guest today is Jo Lamble, clinical psychologist and co-author of the book, The New Teen Age: How to Support Today's Tweens and Teens to Become Healthy, Happy Adults. Jo Lamble and Dr. Ginny Mansberg co-authored this book for parents, which has just been published, and I have a copy here that I have been reading over the last couple of weeks. It's fantastic. This book features many well-known parent experts and health professionals, including a few quotes from myself in regards to online safety. Jo, welcome to the Digital Families Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to chat.
Yeah, it's wonderful to chat with you. And of course, I have chatted with you before because of this book.
Yes, thank you for your contributions. We love the fact that we've got so many voices in there. So it's not just Ginny and my voice. They're experts such as yourself who can, you know, lend their voices to this important topic of parenting teenagers today.
Which leads me to my first question, which is what prompted you and Dr. Mansberg to write this book in the first place?
Ginny and I have been good friends for years since we met on the set of Sunrise in Channel 7 in Sydney, and we clicked straight away. We saw things the same way. We had kids mm-hmm. around the same age. We've got kids who are now in their mid-20s, and we were talking about how we saw so many parents struggling with parenting their teenagers. So when Ginny suggested, hey, why don't we write a book about it, I jumped at it, and luckily Murdoch Publishing were also happy with the idea.
You cover everything in there. And what I have to say is we have kids about the same age. I have a nearly 25-year-old and nearly 22-year-old at uni. And there's, funnily enough, particularly the youngest one at 21, nearly 22, still falls into the category of some of this stuff. So I was reading it and thinking, there's still a lot of that teenage behaviour that happens in the early 20s. So if you're listening to this and you have kids in your 20s, I really recommend that you look at this because, well, they say that the brain doesn't really develop, particularly in boys, until, what is it? Is it 25?
25, exactly. There's so much research on that now. So, yeah, and we've got to give them the benefit of the doubt and realise that if you're panicking, you're thinking, hold on, they've got a while to go. So by 25, there's plenty of time afterwards to still be their parents. Yes, we can have a lot of...
Oh, you never stop.
No, exactly.
You never stop. So it covers chapters such as eating, sleeping, the biology of your teen brain, relationships within the family, school, menstrual cycles, acne, which was really comprehensive. I read that one through about, you know, not allowing you to go into your kids' room, what to do with that. Of course, life online is a big one. Sex, good kids, bad habits, healthy minds, so many different things. And as this is a Digital Families Podcast, so we're going to focus on sort of around those areas, but we'll cover all the sorts of areas so that parents listening to this can get some really good advice from you. One of the quotes talks about parents feeling like failures, and I certainly hear that quite a lot from parents. There's an overwhelming sense with a lot of parents that come to my talk that they're terrified of having teens. They think their teens are automatically going to turn into monsters. Like, it's kind of like they'll say to me, oh, well, you know, in primary school, I've got this very small, narrow window of opportunity when they're in year 5 and 6 and they're just about to go on to, you know, well, they already are on social media, because by the time they're teenagers, I will have lost control of them. And having had 4 kids, 2 of my stepchildren are now adults with kids of their own, I have to be really honest with them and say every single teenager is different. Not all teenagers turn into monsters. But you write in the book about this overwhelming sense that you feel from parents that they are failing. Where does that come from?
It's so sad, isn't it? It's just as if our parents didn't have this feeling and that generations gone by.
I don't remember my mother ever saying that. She just sort of like...
Exactly. They presume we're going to be okay, that we were okay. If we're going to school, we played a bit of sport, we had a few friends, and we were home when the streetlights came on. So they presume we're okay, but today's parents aren't. And that's what I was talking about before, when Ginny and I are hearing this all the time, parents really fearful. They're fearful, and so they think if they don't get really good marks at school and go on to uni or a job to be able to buy a house and be successful, then they're failures as parents. There is this incredible pressure. And so any little blip along the way, they think, oh, my gosh, they are going to be drunk, drugged, screen addicted, unable to function. So they panic, and the kids are also feeling this pressure. The teams are saying that they're feeling, even if it's not said to them, they are feeling this pressure to do well and to not put a foot out, out of step. Professor Ian Hickey, talks about the parents today are feeling responsible for every emotion their child has, every mark they get, every team they're picked for. The parents are feeling responsible for it, and they're so full of fear that if they look the wrong way or drop the ball, then their child will run off the rails. So it is, we really need to, and Ginny and I have tried really hard to not wag our finger at parents and to just say, look, we'll all fail. Gosh, we've put our own failures in there as well. We'll all fail, but that doesn't mean our kids are going to be monsters or they're going to be in trouble. They're going to be okay. They're still just as resilient, just as strong. They've got wonderful ideas for their future. They've got wonderful dreams and opinions, and we just need to try and relax a little bit and just realise that, you've got this. It's going to be okay.
I think one of the things that I recognised very early in my journey through this, which is over coming up to 11 years now, is the sense I got from parents was there are so many different points of view of how to raise children now, and so many experts. And here's another one. Here's another expert. But we're all these experts, supposedly working in this space that parents don't know which expert to look at, and the experts, a lot of them, not you in this book, and hopefully not me, are telling parents they're all doing it wrong. Do you think that might be part of it? There's just so many of them. I mean, there were very few experts around when I was raising my kids. I mean, I didn't really have that access to the internet that parents have now. I'd have to go down to the library and try and find a book on something, and there weren't that many.
No, and I think when, as you say, when the internet came in, we were just learning about it. So we learned about it in the early days, and then by the time our children came online, so we had a little bit of an idea, but we weren't all involved in social media, and so we've just been learning, behind them. Our children are learning faster; they're ahead of us. And then I think what happened is a lot of the experts in the early days of the internet and the social media, it was very fear-driven. It was very, if you don't be careful, they are going to they're going to be taken from you, or something horrendous is going to happen to them. So make sure you watch them like a hawk. Make sure you protect them and wrap them up. And, again, I think that there's so much fear in parents, especially around this digital space, fear as well as exasperation and frustration. And so they just don't know where to turn.
I think that gets clicks, doesn't it? The negative. I mean, we see it in media all the time, don't we? So much so that you have to actually have a program called the Good News Program.
exactly, to counterbalance it. And I think what happens is that the other thing that changed in, as you say, the generational change in our day. I don't know about you, but in most households, we were just programs on television we weren't allowed to watch, and we sort of had a limit. We weren't allowed to watch it all evening. We weren't allowed to watch it all weekend. So I think today's parents understandably think, okay, well, I'll do the same thing. So let's just stick to 2 hours screen time a day, and these are the things you can't go on. But it is so much more complicated than that. As those simple rules don't work anymore. You can't just say, right, get off. That's enough. You need to know, you need to be involved. You need to dive into this online world with them. Let them be your teacher sometimes.
Oh, and absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Exactly. I know these are all your wonderful words as well. So, again, if parents can hear that and say, okay, don't be the ostrich and don't just say, get off your screen, get off that device, but just sit with them and say, okay, What do you enjoy? What are you looking at? What do you do when you feel uncomfortable? You know, ask them. What when
Oh,
they
absolutely.
with something they see, let you be the person they come to, so together you can navigate it. Let them be good digital citizens. All this stuff that we know, that's what helps, rather than just putting in these limits and thinking, okay, good, now put the limits in, now I can go about and not worry
I
about them.
know. Yep, that magic button that they all want. I can remember this poor father at one of my talks once after my talk, and I could see he was kind of like so overwhelmed by the end of the talk about everything that I was talking about, and he said, "I just don't get it." And I said, "What don't you get?" And he said, "I don't understand why my daughter is just so caught up in Instagram." And I said, I said, "Have you ever asked her?" And he went, "No." And all the other parents just went, "Yeah." Like, and I said, "Ask her." And it was a revelation to him because he thought if he showed any interest in it, it would just encourage her, and then he would lose control of how much she was seeing. So there is a sense with a lot of parents that if you show any interest in what they're doing on their screens, there is a risk that you encourage it.
That's right. And I think that I can understand it. We can understand, you know, again, it's coming from a place of fear, but that's so many topics, isn't it? If you discuss drugs with your child, or sex, or pornography, or suicide, any of these things, if you discuss it, you are actually encouraging it, and rather than just, you know, don't mention the war.
So
And
does that ever happen, Joe? Like, have someone done a research that on parents that actually talk to their kids about all this thing and found that their kids have just rushed out, become pregnant, got on drugs, drank themselves silly? Has that
in
happened?
fact, it's quite the opposite. There's quite a lot of research that says that the more you can talk about these issues with your children, the safer they will be, the better informed they'll be, the more likely they'll come to you. And the Australian Institute of Family Studies still says that teens go to their parents first. We are still their first port of call. So parents need to remember that we're fearful that we've lost them and only their friends matter, but they are still going to come to us, and we need to be. And we need to be that solid rock, even though inside we might be freaking out. We need to externally say, I can hear anything. I can talk about anything. Let us do this together.
And I think sometimes parents fear that, the kids aren't listening. And I've as a parent myself of four teens, sometimes when I was talking to my child about something or my teen about something, I thought, oh my God, that's just, gone in one ear and out the other. And then blow me down, a couple of weeks later, they would do something that showed me they actually had listened. So it's not always a vacuum you're talking into, and it doesn't mean you've got to keep pressing the point or go on and on and on. It's just the right time, isn't it, to talk to kids and just sometimes you just have to step back. You've said it. I used to call it the hit and run. Sometimes what I'd do is I'd be going out for a walk, and I knew I had to say something to my child about something. I don't know what it could have been, clean up your room, or, I'm concerned about this. And I would just blurt it out, and then I go off for a walk now, and I'd go before they had a chance to bite my head off. That was the hit and run.
Yeah, it's perfect. Such a great strategy. I'm going to share that. I'll tell them yours. I think what's really important, how you know that they're listening, is because, gosh, if you say something they don't agree with while they've got advice, well, they'll, you know, absolutely perk up straight away. And you don't even know what you're talking about. They'll hear that. So if they're hearing that, they're also hearing our other healthier message.
Throw the word chocolate cake or something in the middle of something that I know.
Perfect.
So one of the things that really fascinated me in your book, because I still have a young man at home that struggles with this, is the sleep chapter. And I think there must be, 100,000 parents out there at the moment dealing with issues around sleep, particularly as we're in lockdown. That means that kids haven't been getting up. Teenagers have not been getting, I mean, look, my young man sometimes doesn't get up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon because he's been up talking to all his mates from uni all night. And of course, it's really, really important for their mental health and their physical health to have sleep. So, what kind of advice can you give to parents that might have a teen at home that is not seeing the light of day and is really suffering because of the lack of proper regulated sleep and eating at all the right times they're supposed to be eating at? Help me, Joe. Help me.
Started with the chapter and Ginny's fabulous information on sleep, because it is step one. Because without sleep, as you say, they're not going to be thinking properly, they're not going to be making good decisions. Their weight, their skin, their mood, their motivation, everything is impacted by sleep. So it's coming to the conversation with them with research, with knowledge. Again, they've got very strong radars for any hypocrisy. So if you're up all night, and you're sitting on your screens and, you know, you're staying up and not getting enough sleep, then they're going to say, well, you don't. Now I know we're the parents, but they are watching. So we want to be good role models as well. So come with that research. Teenagers need 8 to 10, ideally 9 to 10 hours of sleep a night. And they're just not getting
it. That's a lot, isn't it?
It is a lot, but that's exactly what they need. And because of how they're wired, they're often feeling tired later and wanting to sleep in longer, but the school system doesn't allow for that. So that's why, you know, again, it's coming to them, showing them that you understand that it's hard, but saying you're going to win this battle for their sake. And I always say, look, when you're older, when you're adult, you can stay up all night if you want when you're in your home. And so you give them, this is just for the period when you're in my care, I'm going to do everything I can to help. So that means sometimes limiting all these extracurricular activities, because so many kids, so many teens are coming, finishing school and then doing an activity, then coming in the early evening, having their dinner, then they've got to do their homework and then they've got to relax. They've got to relax with their social media or online, and they're not getting asleep till 10, 11, 12, and then their alarms go off at 6 or 7 for school. So then you're talking to them, okay, well, how are we going to shift things around? How are we going to work together to get you enough sleep? How are we going to make sure you talk to them? When is a good time for you to be online with your friends? So let's talk about what's a good time for dinner. Let's talk about what's a good time for homework. Let's talk about whether you can fit some other activities in, because we're basing all this around you being asleep by, say, 10 o'clock if you're getting up at, 6 or 7, or earlier if you're getting up earlier. So, I mean, again, it's like everything. If you make, you're coming from a point of helping them, you're on their side, you want the best for them. This is not about making their life a misery. This is not about stopping them having time with their friends. And I think, again, well-meaning parents are saying, no, it's really important that they play this sport or the instrument or be in this play. And of course it is. All those things are wonderful. But if they're doing that, plus they've got a certain amount of homework, plus the brief dinner time, and then say, okay, so the parents say, right, so that means no time online, no social media, because you need to get to sleep. That's not fair. That's their way of relaxing. Other things may have to be sacrificed in order for them to also get that little time online.
It's so, so different, isn't it, from when we grew up? Because we actually, it was a completely different era. I had mates that lived in the same area, and I guess we played together after school or hung out together after school. But mainly we just had that one telephone line, didn't we? And your parents wouldn't let you talk to your girlfriend for any longer than a certain time because no one else could phone in. But these kids have grown up with a different expectation, and so have their parents. So, you know, my stepchildren are now in their 30s with kids of their own, and they're really terrified about how of the impact of the internet on their young children. And they grew up with it right through their early 20s with an expectation of being able to socialise online. So I don't think we can compare it, can we? We just can't compare the same thing. They have an expectation of socialising. And kids, as you say in your book, their brain works differently. All of a sudden they're incredibly alert later in the evening. And their brain is, you know, it's great for all studying and for playing together and gaming and all that kind of stuff. And then how do they shut it off to go to sleep?
So, again, it's talking to them about, okay, how can we bring all this forward? Because it's no use saying to them, okay, you can go online and talk to your friends at 4:30 to 5:30 after school. They'll say no one's on there.
They're not on.
So again, if you make these rules, just these blanket rules, because we used to play outside with our friend down the road at that time, so that's when you can go online, they're not going to do it. It has to be realistic, because we want their buy-in. If you get their buy-in, I just remember so clearly when my son, my eldest child, was doing his final year at school, and that's just when Facebook was starting to take off. And so I just remember sitting on his bed saying, gosh, this must be hard. How can you study when you've got these distractions? And he just, because I started it with that sentence, he just said, it is, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Said, okay, so what will help? Let's talk about what will help. So how, you know, he said, well, it might be really good if I, you know, have the phone out while I'm studying and then I have time to have it back in afterwards. And so we just negotiated and chatted about what would work for him. Whereas if you come in and say, nope, that's not allowed. And if you don't, I'm taking all your devices off you.
Yeah.
And I'm taking them off for you know, a time. I'm not going to tell you how long. And then I had some parents here on Friday who were saying that, you know, the son, when they took the phone off him one night, he actually had the father up against the wall by his neck because he was so outraged because he thought that was so unfair. You didn't give me any warning. You've just come into my room and taken the phone off. So. Again, I mean, I can understand these poor parents. They were just so exasperated. They wanted their son to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But we need to work with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And on phones and in bedrooms and everything, there's constant debates going on social media about sleepovers and phones. And this is not just teenagers, it's primary school kids as well. And what I see when I look at these debates is that some parents will have a basket and they'll have, obviously there's no sleepovers right at the moment here in Sydney, but when they do, some parents will say, look, we don't want, you know, the kids to have the phones in their rooms because we know that's the time they get up to mischief and all kinds of things can go wrong. But we'll have a basket outside in the lounge room. We'll put all the phones in that basket. If a child really wants to connect with their parent, they can come outside, see me and say, I just need to ring mum or dad, and they can do that. Or if the parent wants to ring the child, then obviously they'll bring the phone to them. And then there's a lot of pushback from other parents saying that's a violation, and any parent that would do that, I wouldn't allow my child to stay at night because I need to know that that child is safe. And all, what's your observations on that? Is that something you've been coming up against as well?
I certainly have. And again, that's the same. And if we can keep thinking about it, it's the same as other things. You know, you can have a rule that your child is not allowed to watch an MA film, but they go to a sleepover and they are. You know, there's or what they're allowed to see online and then they go to a sleepover and there's different rules. So these sort of issues have come up, you know, through the ages. I'm a big fan of having phones outside the bedrooms. I just think it is a sensible thing to do. But if you... If you try and stick to the rules in your house and you say to your teenagers or your, you know, young primary school kid, no, we're not going to allow these devices in the room overnight, so please tell your friends before they come and blame us, blame me, always saying that, blame me, just say, yeah. Oh, my mother's so strict she won't let it. Let them know that that's going to be the rule. And if if their parents won't let them come, you know, you can just support your teen and say, look, I'm sorry, that's really sad for you, but you haven't lost your friend. That's just a rule in their house, but this is what we're going to do and we're going to stick to it. Because if there are two teens don't cope, if there's the rule, but then we'll bend it now and then they see, again, they might think, oh, great, these rules aren't hard and fast. But that makes them feel a little uneasy because they like to know that they can push the boundary and the boundary will stay firm. They like that because that gives them that sense of security. So, again, yes, if parents don't like the idea of another parent taking away their child's phone overnight, then, yes, feel free not to let them go to that house.
Okay. And on this similar kind of tactic, the other thing that I'm seeing a lot of debate about is tracking on teens' phones. So I'll go to a school and ask the students how many of them have got Life 360, which is a very well-known tracking device on phones, as well as Find My Friend, which is on Apple phones. And the kids all kind of roll their eyes like this. So many kids know how to get around that, by the way. There's a whole series on TikTok of how to get around those things. And parents are loving it because it gives them that sense of security. They know exactly where their kids are. What are your thoughts on that? You do cover that in the book.
Yeah, look, I'm not a fan of tracking. I think if your child is generally where they're meant to be, when they're meant to be there, then I think they should have our trust and they should have their, you know, growing independence and freedom. If you find that they're not where they're meant to be or that they change plans, then talk to them and say, listen, now I'm worried because you didn't make a great decision here. So I'm going to give you another chance. So please make the right decision and just tell me where you are. Just let me know, ask permission, you know, just the normal parenting things. And if they don't, then you get their buy-in and then say, okay, now what we're going to need to do is let's talk about and get openly put a tracking device on their phone. And yes, they can get round it. But the fact that you're then, there's other things to do that aren't tracking. You can, if they say they're going down to the mall or they're going to the beach or the park, you know, and they've got their phone with them, then you can just say, well, I'm just going to be swinging by because I've got to pick up something so I can give you a lift home. Or grandma's going to be in the area. And again, just show them that you are going to be just making sure they're doing what they say they're doing. And if they are, then that's great. If you find that they make bad decisions and they're not where they say they're going to be and you've installed a tracking device and then you find out they are starting to make good decisions and they're being safe and everything's okay, then you can say, oh, good, well, we can remove this now. That's great. So, you give them the opportunity to win back your trust and then you step back a bit again and then say, but if you're not safe, then we're going to step forward. So you're just playing this dance of giving them the chance to grow up, giving them the freedom that they really need, that independence, the opportunity to make good decisions. And if they don't, then you're just giving them a short-term consequence, but it's not a punishment. It's all about just, okay, now this isn't safe, so let's make some other decisions.
Yeah. I used some tracking on my kids, mm-hmm. and then my son was about 20 and he told me, I have tracking on my husband. He disappears every now and then. But I think the thing that I found when I had tracking with my kids was I very rarely ever used it. One of my sons used to ride his bike to a friend's place, and I was, when he first started to do it, he was probably about 11, I guess, or 12, and I was terrified, you know, because it was further than he'd ever been before. And I'd say to him, send me a text when you get there. And of course, he never would. And I'd ring home and couldn't get through to the mother and all that. So I ended up putting a tracker on him because he was so unreliable. But it always had permission from my parents, from them. And I always said to them, if you want to turn it off, let me know and I'll turn it off. I had goody two shoes, nerdy kids. And so it wasn't too much of a problem for me. But that's what I'd say to parents is if you do have the tracker on your kids, don't, you know, watch their every move all the time because it gives you so much anxiety.
Well, that's right. And do you know what I hear in my office so often? I mean, apart from seeing just reams of text messages and email exchanges from parents, you know, bringing in their teenagers' transcripts. But also they come and say, right, okay, well, I'm tracking my child and I found that they were in this certain suburb at this time and they were meant to be at sport. So what do I do? So, well, this is
ask them when they get home.
No, we don't want to. This is what they say. I don't want to tell them because then they'll know I'm tracking them.
Oh, so, okay.
Trouble without their buy-in, they're tracking them, they're finding something they're worried about, but then they say, okay, I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, and that is a really good way of losing trust completely.
Oh,
so it's got to be open. You've got to be transparent about it. And the other thing that I found with tracking was that it meant if you were tracking your kids all the time, and I found this with my kids, they didn't learn to check in.
Mm.
Because they didn't have to. They'd say, oh, you know where I am because of the thing. And that's something that, you know, you need to learn to do as you're growing up because once you become a couple with someone, unless you're tracking each other all the time, like I do with my husband who disappears to Bunnings when he's not supposed to be there, you don't learn to check in and to let people know where your whereabouts are. So you're finding there's a whole generation of kids that don't check in with the parent or even a flatmate when they move out of home because they've never had to.
That's right. And there's so many, I mean, we could talk about just even this issue alone for an hour or two. I mean, even with that, as you say, if they don't learn to just check in and say, hey, I'm just ducking out here or there and this is a change of plans. But the other thing that can happen is the kids are now tracking each other.
And oh, yes.
Yeah. And they've got this enormous fear of missing out because they find, oh, my gosh, all my friends are in this certain area and I'm not there. I mean, it's not good for them either. So, again, if we're trying to say, okay, well, let's just go We can't wind the clock back. We know that technologically, but we can say, okay, well, unless there's danger involved, don't check where your friends are all the time. I'm not going to check on where you are all the time. Let's just go back a little bit to just sitting and being present with each other face to face or online during a normal fun exchange.
So we have to wind up now because I've taken up far too much of your time, Joe, and I can see you're at work there. So the book covers cyberbullying, of course, which is a huge issue, unfortunately, for parents. Pornography and nudes is another issue that is massive for parents of teens. And at the moment, you know, with working at home, there's a lot of concern. So if you wanted to give parents a sort of final bit of advice on, you know, helping their teens through these particularly difficult times and all the concerns that they have with screen time and what kids are doing online, what would that be?
I would say there are so many good resources out there. Find out, and Ginny and I have tried to put so many resources where to go. You know, there's a great one. It's time. What's it? It's Time We Talk. Is it on pornography? There's reachout.com. There are so many wonderful resources. If you are stuck and I don't know how to have this conversation about pornography, or I don't know how to have the conversation about nudes or about gender diversity or whatever it is, there are so many wonderful resources out there. So before you have the conversation, have a look, find out some information. So you go into those conversations, because there are lots of conversations to have. You go into those conversations equipped with some knowledge to sit down with your child and say, I'm here with you, able to hear anything, and we can work on this together. If you go in with that message, then these conversations, you don't have to be so fearful and think you need to know everything and think you know how to deal with everything, because we don't. It's ever changing and
yeah.
Other people are doing this work for us. Other people in the area, like yourself, are doing this work for us. So we parents can sit back and look for Leonie Smith to tell us, okay, what should we do with this latest safety feature, or what should we do to keep our kids safe? So again, I think that's the other trouble, because parents think they need to know it all, and they, of course, they can't. None of us do. There are plenty of people that we can turn to.
Yeah, that's right. And don't be afraid to admit when you don't know it.
Yes, that's right. You know,
if you've made a mistake or you're wrong or whatever, the most generous thing you can do is to say to your child, you know what, I really screwed that up. I'm really sorry. I thought that was the right thing. You know, you've allowed your child to have something and it's turned out that it's not safe or whatever it might be. It's okay to say, you know, I'm learning like you. And I think the important thing you just said there, Joe, was about being alongside them. And I think that's really important, rather than just sort of decreeing things from on high and making sort of rules that don't involve your kids. Obviously, when they're really little and they can't have a great deal of input into it, but it's about being alongside them, isn't it?
It is. It is. And if they feel that, if they feel that they have got a voice, and we are going to listen to it, it's going to be our final say, but we're going to listen to them, and we will change. When circumstances change, we can discuss it again and again, because that's a life lesson. That's what's going to happen when they're out in the workforce. They're going to have rules there, but they're going to have the opportunity.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We can't forget that. You know, they have to learn. They have to be able to survive in, you know, a society that is full of restrictions and full of rules, and also full of disappointments and steps forward and steps back, and they have to be able to cope with that.
That's right. We can help.
Okay, and you can help them with this book, which is absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much to both of you for putting this together. Highly recommended. And I'm actually trying to get my son to read the section on sleep.
Ooh, my son's read it. He's been reading, quoting all these things, saying, oh, wow, I've learned this and that. So he's 27, learning a lot. It's good.
So that's fantastic. And where can people get a hold of this?
Everywhere. Yep. No, it's in all bookshops, all online, audio copies. Yep. No, it's.
Yep. I know. It's in Kmart from what I noticed as well. Yep. So you just look out for this.
Yes.
Look out for the cover wherever you are. And if you're in lockdown in Sydney, this will be a great resource for you. And you can buy that from Booktopia or Amazon or wherever, and they'll send it out to you nice and fast. Lovely to talk to you, Joe.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you again for contributing to the book. It was really, really helpful.
It was fun chatting to you about it. It was great. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Digital Families Podcast. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review or some feedback on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, whatever that is, because I love to hear what you think. Maybe you've got a suggestion for a potential upcoming guest. Tune in next week for our next chat about all things digital and how it affects families. Thank you.